Welcome to the Sons of Liberty podcast, coming to you from the Liberty Tree Studio in San Antonio, Texas, where we discuss topics of the day, firearms, great food, and even better whiskey. Grab a drink, sit down with your host, the founding daddies, Mike Mahalski and Kyle Grothus.
All right, guys, how's it going? Welcome to the Sons of Liberty podcast. Been a little while since we've shot an episode. We're going to try to get back into it. We've got our friends here today from Primary Arms, is our largest commercial dealer. Great friends of ours. I'll let y'all introduce yourselves. Start with Aaron over here.
Yeah, I'm Aaron Watley, Vice President of Merchandising, Primary Arms. You know, it's absolute pleasure to be here today, and thank you guys for inviting us.
I'm Sam Honeycutt. I'm the lower parts buyer for Primary Arms. It's been a pleasure being here so far. We really appreciate it, guys.
Just lower parts?
Yes, sir. So I do everything that goes in a stripped lower or the complete lower itself, right? Trigger, pins, grip, stock, buffer kit, buffer, you know, complete buffer tube, all that jazz.
Yeah, y'all got real specific jobs over there. I've always noticed that. You know, you got like upper parts, lower parts, parts people use on Tuesday. No.
That's coming.
Yeah, Sam is our resident gun nerd in cloning whore. So
I like clone guns; they're nice.
No, me too. That's actually kind of a thing of mine too. So, like, we'll have to talk after this.
That's always been one thing with Primary Arms. You've always done really, really well with our swag and our clothing. If y'all are looking for shirts and stuff like that, and we don't have in stock, or y'all want to buy parts and shirts that we may not have in stock on our website, Primary Arms is always a place to go because y'all. Y'all have always been a big believer in doing our swag and merch and stuff, and that's always been a good avenue for us there with y'all.
Yeah, and I want to remind people that, and this is really important to me. I mean, like, I look at the history and the growth of our company. Primary Arms was the first like major retailer to really believe in Sons Liberty and take a shot on us, and I'm glad y'all did it. It contributed a lot to our growth, and I think it was a winning bet for you guys as well.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that was Joe Falcon was the one that kind of started at the very beginning, wasn't he? That kind of brought us to y'all's attention, I think.
Yeah. Joe had, he's you know, from San Antonio, and he had visited you guys' facility, back at the old facility. And he came back, you know, after a weekend with you guys, and it was just like, hey, you guys got to check out Sons of Liberty. I'm like, who? And they're like, Sons of Liberty, he showed me your site and everything, you know, everything you guys were doing, you know, from day one with your warranty stuff and your LE stuff and, you know, standing behind, you know, anything that happened with firearms that were used in defense or on patrol or anything like that. And like, man, I got to get behind these guys. So, you know, we've been rocking with you guys since day one, been big believers in the brand.
No, we, like I said, it had a lot to do with how we were able to ramp up, and we don't forget our friends, the ones that took a shot on us, man. So that's why Primary, if you notice a lot of the cool new stuff that trickles out, you probably go find it there first, you know.
Yeah, bit of foreshadowing there. Keep an eye on us. We got some cool shit coming.
That's always been a great thing with y'all, is y'all are always willing to jump on. There's not a lot of convincing that needs to be done. Y'all believe in us, and we bring y'all new stuff. There's not a lot of, you know, we got to think about it. Let's have some meetings. You know, we'll add it in a couple months. Like, y'all are ready to go out of the gate with pretty much everything. So that helps a lot. Makes it easy for us because we're, especially this last year, really changing a lot of our product lineup, new rails, completely redid our barrel line. I mean, just constantly coming out with new stuff, and having vendors that are flexible and willing to roll with the changes helps a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be nimble. I mean, you know, not everybody's as nimble as we've seen in the industry, and we're big believers in that. It takes us about, you know, 2.5 minutes to you know, add a list of new SKUs, and 2 minutes of that is waiting on the damn Excel sheet to load. So it's super easy.
The spreadsheet of death, yeah, with some of our other customers, that's what our guys, they hate that thing, and they're all different, so you can't just have, like, that's what we need to work on, like an industry standard, like Excel format for adding new products, because that would save everybody a shitload of time.
Yeah, we can't get the industry on the same page about a lot of things, but I think that has a winning shot.
It's like, look, we got to do it, but you only got to do it once, not four times.
Right. But you know, we're super excited to be here. We've been here for a few days now, shooting a bunch of content, you know, so all of our customers, stay on the lookout on our site. We're going to have a bunch of videos and social stuff coming out soon, in addition to those new products we were talking about, you know. you know, some leakage going on there too. So super stoked, and it's been an absolute blast, and we appreciate you guys having us out.
No, it's been fun. It gets me. I got sort of the range to go shoot, which is nice because I don't get to do that as much as I used to. That's one of the funny things. I don't know. Is this like this for you guys? Like before, you know, before your career was guns, did you shoot more?
Yeah.
that's kind of a thing across the entire industry. I talk to everybody. We all got into this business because we were like gun nerds and hardcore end users and, you know, gun junkies. And then once this becomes the way you feed your family, all of a sudden, you know, like that first weekend where you actually have some breathing room, like, do you want to go shoot? I'm like, nah.
Not today. Yeah, I don't want to look at a rifle for like 3 days, but
that is the curse. We get to do some fun stuff. We get to play with some cool stuff. The curse is that everything at some point becomes work.
Yeah, I used to shoot matches and stuff. You know, at Lone Star, we went to go shoot the other day, and you know, it's little small little hometown matches, and like I haven't done that in, it's been a couple of years. I mean, I still shoot and I still train, but it's pretty usually training. That's about the only time I really go out and shoot a lot. Unless I'm that or hunting.
Yeah, that's about the same for our group too. And you know, we've had a lot of conversations about that recently, and how, you know, we don't set aside enough time for actually, you know, enjoying the culture. So that's been a big objective for me this year with the entire team. You know, I've set aside a budget at the beginning of the year, and I'm paying for all my buyers and some of our purchasing agents to attend, you know, classes across Texas. And, you know, I've got a couple guys that'll be, you know, hooked up at symposium next weekend. And you know, just really being intentional about, hey, enjoy this culture too, because it's a whole lot of fun if you get into it.
Oh yeah, 1,000%, man. And then for me, it's most of the shooting I'm doing. I'm embarrassed to say I have not done a lot of training classes in the last couple of years. I mean, almost all the shooting I do is either for R&D, data collection, you know, researching this, like, you know, trying to do destructive testing on whatever we're working on. And so that's, you know, it has to be done, and I get to pull the trigger a lot. It's just not, it's not always very fun. Yeah. And it's not also social too. Like, one of the cool things about, like, you know, a symposium and some of these matches is just hanging out with, you know, your buddies and your like-minded people, you know, after the match or something like that, right? Like, you know, data collection is not always very a social endeavor.
There's no one, yeah, no one to talk to. Symposium runs out of alcohol every year, so that's all, you know, it's more much seeing everybody. I mean, it's like SHOT Show. Like, I actually enjoy SHOT Show, but a lot of people dread it. And I'm like, it's fun, man. It's the only time I get to see a lot of people and hang out with them every year. And, you know, we have vendors and customers and suppliers all over the state, and we try to get out and visit them, but you can't see everybody every year, you know, throughout the year. It would eat up all your time. So it's great to be able to go seeing everybody. And going back to what you're saying about paying for your guys to do training, that's awesome. We've been doing that for a few years, and not everybody takes advantage. You know, we can't force them to do it, but we really encourage our guys to go out and train or shoot matches, or, you know, get out and shoot, and really it helps them with their job, because they get to see how the guns get used and see how they function, versus just seeing them in a more like clinical environment, you know, when we're manufacturing them and gauging them and stuff like that. So,
and it definitely makes for a more well-rounded everything, whether you're a buyer, armor, whatever, you know, actually getting super familiar with it makes you more well-rounded.
Yeah, and whether you guys know it or not, I mean, you guys have contributed to that a lot within our group as well. I mean, for a couple of years now, we've been, you know, partnering with you guys and sending a few of our employees here and there to some of your armors courses, and you guys always welcome us with open arms. You know, I think you guys have one coming up in May, you know, just south of here, and I've got a couple of my guys that'll be in attendance there. And just to get, you know, a baseline understanding of the platform, and, you know, why everything is the way it is, and just, you know, sit with, you know, like you said, like-minded folks and talk about, you know, the things that are great about it.
Yeah, I mean, our class is unique. I mean, I've been through other OEM schools, and I've been through other armorers classes, and it's kind of a verbal instruction manual, whereas ours really gets into, like, the theory of the gun, like the why, not just the how-to, but the why. And we really deep dive, you know, and it's not a Sons Liberty product push. It's not like we're standing up there talking about Sons Liberty guns. We're talking about standards and components and materials and performance metrics and things of that. Like, and most people that love it, most people that take it, you know, actually really do love it. So yeah, I'm excited to see some of your guys come through, and I'd like to start doing more, you know, more of these classes. We're finishing the curriculums on some other. It's kind of like a decision tree type of thing for some of the different curriculums for people that want to go even further down the rabbit holes. And it's been an exciting year, you know, for that kind of stuff. Yeah, you would dig it.
Yeah, me personally, I'll be attending the next available advanced course that you guys are planning.
Yeah,
I'll be in there.
Yeah, I think the first one this year is coming up at Chad's place. What, in a few weeks, isn't it? Advanced course.
Yeah, I'll be up in. Yeah, is it Connecticut, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's looking forward to get some clam chowder. Hey, so, what your overall state of the industry? What are you seeing right now? Is this the calm before the storm? I mean, everyone that I have spoken to personally has, like, there's like this weird kind of eerie calm right now, but everybody has this sense and this instinct that we're in for a very bizarre year, not just with gun sales, but just in general, right? And I think that everyone has this sense that things might get interesting for one reason or another, right? We're coming into an election year, and I'm not going to get any kind of politics or something, but typically, historically, that's usually for the industry. Historically, that's usually it accelerates some things, but this is a little bit different than any other year that I can remember in terms of like the uncertainty and kind of like this, there's this weird kind of feeling that everyone seems to share. And I talked to my friends across the industry, across the country, everyone kind of feels like some weird calm before. Do y'all agree? Do y'all see that? Do y'all feel it?
Yeah. And you're describing it spot on. I mean, it's a feeling, you know, full disclosure, you know, nobody knows what the hell is going to happen in this industry ever, even in the slowest of the years. Right.
Yeah.
But you know, we put a lot of investment into our data research and growing our team and looking at, you know, SKU by SKU, what's the history, what's happened over the last 4 years, what's happened over the last 8 years. And we have a pretty good feeling backed up by data that Q3, Q4, you know, second half of the year is going to be pretty interesting, and you know, we're prepping for that. So
yeah, no, we are too. I mean, we've already started the conversations with making sure raw materials, like, we're at the point now where we're, you know, we're purchasing the raw materials. We're actually going out there and, you know, helping our some of the contract manufacturers that we use for certain things, like, you know, to get them spun up on stuff. I mean, some of our guys are actually standing up other, you know, new machines for things, just kind of getting that capacity there. There's the organic growth of the company, but then there's also this kind of foreshadowing of, like, we expect it to get a little bit interesting. Now, you touched on something that I kind of want to hit on. Y'all probably have some of the best, like, SEO in the industry as far as the way y'all populate on things. I mean, like, I don't know of anybody that does that better. I mean, how long have y'all been working on that presence online?
Oh man, it's been a long road. Let's see. We really started bolstering our marketing department and focus on web content, web development in probably 2016.
Oh, wow.
That was really the start of it. You know, we've had a few iterations and we learned how to do things wrong multiple times. but I think that's all part of the fun, right? And now we have a pretty, really solid team and some guys that, you know, from inside the industry, some guys from outside the industry that talk about how, you know, bigger industries are doing things. And we put a lot of investment into it, and it's paying off. I mean, our guys are top of the line.
Have y'all had any struggles working with Google or search engines or the kind of keywords we're talking about, considering the industry we're in? Do you see any? Is it hard to navigate that space?
Oh, it's 100% more difficult than I would say a lot of our competitors. You know, we're kind of stubborn and we refuse to take arms out of our name. And that's a dinger for sure when dealing with anything with Google or YouTube or anything like that. But you know, we figure our ways around it, and we're stubborn in a way that we're gonna be successful no matter what.
Yeah, when I think to this all the time when I was messing around in my garage. we never pictured, you know, kind of where our company would be 10 years later. You know, whenever you're sitting down and you're kind of sketching out the logo on a napkin, and you're kind of you're branding. You there's no way to predict where you're going to be. We never saw this. Like, I mean, I wanted to be a super successful and disruptive rifle company, but you don't know what that looks like until you actually get there. You know what I mean? You have no idea. You can imagine it, but until you see like the forklifts and the pallets and the flatbeds, you know, I never pictured this, I think, from when we first started, you know.
That's not something we, you know, since we've moved into this shop a few years ago, everything has jumped into high gear. And I mean, it's at a much higher level than we've ever been before. And talking about the industry and the way it's going, I mean, you saw at the beginning, pretty much the beginning of this year, you know, last year was a little slower. Even our OEMs and suppliers and steel manufacturing and everything seemed to kick into high gear about 60, 90 days ago. So I think everybody's anticipating a strong year. Something crazy is going to happen. I mean, just on stuff where, you know, we issue orders for things to be made, and they're like, man, everybody's come to us, like, just piling on orders for, like, barrel extensions. I mean, just crazy stuff. So you're starting to see that the same kind of signs you saw during the rush during COVID and stuff. So it's going to be... It's gonna be a wild year. Hopefully, everybody's a little more prepared this time, so it's not as you're not seeing the widespread outages and stuff. What I you know, don't want the drop culture to come back.
I'm very glad that we're more steady. I'm not a big fan of the drop thing, but what I was getting at is, like, you know, we picked Sons Liberty Gunworks, and having the word gun in your name, I had back at the time when we were starting 2014, this was not like a controversial word. Yes, of course, there was a hardcore push for something. But I mean, like, we never imagined, like, PayPal or Square or QuickBooks or Shopify or YouTube or, you know, back then, like, I mean, you know, remember FPS Russia? I mean, like, you know, yeah. I mean, like,
whatever happened to that guy? Is he dead or in prison or something? I think he's gone, isn't he?
He has a podcast, he does.
Oh, he does?
He's on a podcast called Painkiller Already. He's been doing on that. He went to jail for a brief period of time. And he came back, and his whole jail chronicles or stories are very entertaining. He kind of separated himself from all the gun stuff, but he still does a podcast with a couple of
people.
Does
he still pretend to be Russian?
No, he doesn't. No.
Imagine that in prison, like, he gets there and he's pretending to be in the Russian mob and he's not actually Russian, just doing some fake cheesy fucking accent.
No. Dude, first of all, I'm actually very curious to check out his podcast, because he was a smart and entertaining guy, and I think what happened to him was pretty unfortunate, you know?
Like, yeah, the ATF really, well, the ATF and really the state police and his state really kind of set him up for failure, because they really wanted to make an example out of him.
Yeah.
You know?
He was one of the first high-profile gun personalities that I think were, you know, like, singled out for...
Oh, absolutely.
Kill one to scare the others, you know?
Yeah, his right. treatment by, like, the state level and, like, federal law enforcement was absolutely a result of, like, the amount of, like, social media pressure he was able to put out and be like, hey, like, get everybody comfortable with guns. Like, just the fact that, you know, you could sit in an insurance office and be like, hey, did you see this video where this guy blows up a fridge and almost kills himself? And he's like, no, I haven't seen that, buddy. Oh, yeah, you can share this. And it's commonplace.
Going through the McDonald's drive-through with the fucking tank or whatever crazy shit he did. Yeah.
Yeah, just normalizing that, you know.
Life goals.
Yeah.
He's like Russian gun Jesus.
Yeah. No, I'm very curious to check that podcast out. But, I mean, you know, we see it too. Like, I mean, like, social media, like, every election year, and then, again, not getting political, but it just happens to be true. Every election year, I notice that our microphone gets the volume turned way down. Like, social media engagement will drop by 70, 80, 90%. And it's not because the content that we're putting out has somehow just started to suck. It's that they're squelching anybody that they have labeled as, you know, counter-narrative or whatever the case may be. So that's one of the things that's frustrating and challenging for us, is that, you know, You can clearly watch, y'all guys look at analytics, y'all are super data driven. We're becoming more data driven and actually making more informed decisions for how, instead of just fucking winging it. But you can clearly see the lines, you know, whenever the squelching starts. I mean, it is a cliff, dude.
Yeah.
You know, and then whatever happens, and then it eases back up. And so, unfortunately, I think we're already starting to see some of that. And I've been talking to other friends in this space, and they're kind of noticing it too. So reaching clients anybody that's listening to this, man, encourage your friends to follow us, follow Primary Arms online, you know, and set your alerts to things. Did you see this feature that they added to Instagram where it's a default feature that says see less political content? Have you seen this?
Yeah. Oh, I've seen multiple posts from content creators. I'm like, hey, like, if you want to see like actual like 2A content, you need to go into your settings and you need to disable all these things that come standard. Right. Because the standard configuration of it,
the default setting is show less political content. The problem is that they're not talking about like, you know, Trump ads. They're talking about like, if, you know, if your hashtag is 2A, you know, if it's a gun topic, or, you know, they stretch that term to mean whatever the hell they want, and it usually means, you know, most of our clientele.
Everybody,
yeah.
Well, I think something that'll be really interesting to see is how Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it now, with Elon Musk, you know, holding the reins over there, I think it'll be really interesting to see how the election cycle develops with, like, 2A voice over there, because there's a lot of more prominent like 2A voices that have both, you know, Instagram, Twitter.
We've actually probably got one of the strongest gun Twitters out there. I think we got like 40,000-50,000 followers on X or whatever it's called now, and we made a push real hard on that a few years ago, and
the mongoose
has been killing it, and it's been a good platform for us. Actually, we're one of the few that actually get out there, according to him, and he's the expert on this. He handles it for a lot of a lot of large gun companies and stuff, and he was saying we probably have probably the strongest
in terms of engagement Twitter. Per follower, and then, you know, we also have been experimenting to see if we could run ads for like swag and stuff on there, and they've allowed it, which is a huge deal. I mean, do you remember what it was like to be able to boost? I mean, were you playing with social media back when there were like, it was still the Wild West and like we could boost?
Back in the early days, I didn't have too much to do with it at that point, but you know, I just know how much we're strangled right now in everything that we do. I mean, our account's been suspended like 5 times in the last 12 months, and it's always over like the dumbest shit. I mean, we've had our account suspended for like 4-year-old posts.
So do y'all remember whenever our account got taken down? It was like 2 years ago.
I do.
Yeah, so it got taken down, and it got taken down because it got flagged for being a terrorist organization, and it was from the office. I'm serious. So people don't understand how this thing works. It is a global company, and there's offices across the world.
It was
right?
Like Indonesia or some shit, wasn't it?
It was like Bangladesh or, and somewhere in that office in Indonesia, it got taken down as being flagged for a terrorist organization. Well, luckily, we had a fan that worked at Instagram, and he reached out, and he helped us accelerate our appeal. And that appeal had to go through the office that handles that in Ireland.
Wow.
And so our page got restored because the Irish restored it. So whenever you're looking at, like, you know, content moderation, things like that, you have to remember you're not looking at it through an American lens.
The Irish looked at her and they're like, "Oh, like these aren't terrorists. Like, we know terrorists.
These guys are soft.
It's not the fucking NRA. Weak, yeah, let them go."
So you said NRA. You mean the IRA?
IRA.
Right?
IRA.
Speaking of the NRA, did you see Wayne LaPierre has stepped down?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know what. You know, path they're gonna take now. I mean, a lot of people have promise, but majority of people don't. And you know, I think it's gonna take a lot for you know, a lot of you know, gun community, as I see it, to regain that trust. And you know, what once was a great organization that has kind of, you know, fallen a bit.
I try to remind people, because, like, yes, you know, amongst us, the hardcore gun owners, like, we're not the typical gun owner,
right?
But the typical gun owner is a casual guy. He, you know, he goes into a gun store, buys something because it was on sale or whatever. Like, you and I that have, I don't know, I mean, how many dozens of suppressors and SBRs, and, you know, like, we're certainly not the casual gun owner. And so we lost confidence in the NRA. Thing is, the NRA still was kind of strong amongst the more casual types, right? And then with Wayne LaPierre, I'll tell you this, the NRA certainly needed some rebranding, certainly needed some new leadership. But I try to remind people who are like, have sworn off the NRA forever, the NRA is still probably one of the most effective lobbying groups that we have in terms of like access to lawmakers to talk them off the ledge when they're about to make some kind of horrible vote.
Oh, yeah.
it's them behind closed doors still trying to get that kind of stuff done. But there are certain states where you and I can both attest the state has fallen. Like, I mean, Washington State, that state has fallen. You know, California, there are states like that. I mean, look what's happening right now in Colorado. There's, unfortunately, that is going to come down to litigation. We're going to have to really support FPC, GOA, the 2A coalition,
Second Amendment Foundation,
and then, you know, obviously the NRA. But unfortunately, those states, they're never going to get the vote back for legislation. The only way to restore gun rights and open up those states is going to be through litigation. And that's just kind of where things are.
Yeah, there's still some good people at the NRA. I mean, Todd Rather, I think, still on the board, isn't he? NRA board.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done a lot of great stuff for gun rights. There's some good people there, so hopefully they can get it straight.
Well, I think the NRA has a really big capacity to capture a lot of, like, the new gun owners, right?
Because
when COVID hit, you had, like, what was it, like 4 million new gun owners basically overnight.
Yeah.
And these were people that previously were like, oh, it's whatever. And then as immediately as they were told, oh, there is no more water, there is no more this and that, they were like, yeah, I need a gun. I need a gun. And
I need toilet paper, so I need a
gun. Yeah, exactly. So I think something the NRA can really do, I mean, if it can be as half as scary as the average left-wing political individual wants you to think, right? If they can be half as spooky as the boogeyman as they're supposed to be, I think they can be great. And I think if they can really get, say the average gun owner, like you said, like access to politicians in a very serious manner other than calling them and, you know, having to leave a voicemail, which a lot of them do listen, don't get me wrong, but, you know, a little bit more of a direct access line, I think they can be a tool for good as long as you have, you know, a current, you know, squared away, up-to-date leadership at the head, right? Because it's like any organization. The head's going to lead it. And as long as they're squared away and they're aware of what's happening in the current gun sphere, I think it can be a good thing. It can be a net positive.
Yeah, and for us too. I mean, even though, you know, I don't personally agree with every decision that's been made, but, you know, who does? I'm still a supporter. I'm still a member. And, you know, we as a company, Primary Arms, we're a big supporter of the NRA. And we've been partnered with them for years. You know, where we'll be at NRA annual meeting here in a few months.
I'll be at NRAM too. Yeah.
And for those of you that are listening, that'll be in the area. We also have our annual range day. That's the day before NRA at a local gun range, and that'll be sent out through email blast here pretty soon. And, and that's open to end users. That's open to consumers and, you know, basically anybody who wants to attend. So if you're interested, get signed up.
Yeah, for sure.
We'd appreciate that.
It's a great time. Yeah. We'll have a booth there, but I'll be there to actually launch and showcase our new clothing brand, the Wilderness Company, which is finally here. And we're about to 2 years in the making. It has been so much work, and it's finally here. We're finally about to launch, and I'm super excited about that. And that's where we're going to probably unveil it, like really unveil it, you know?
Yeah, super stoked about that. I mean, I've been a hunter before everything else, and everything that you guys have done. I checked out your clothing and your tripods and everything at SHOT Show. I was super stoked about the patterns and everything that I was seeing. You know, yesterday out on the range, we got a bunch of content on the tripods. Those will be available at Primary Arms LLC pretty soon, by the way. You know, just throw that little ad lib in there. But super stoked about that stuff, and you know, we're interested in moving in that direction.
You know, you had said something I wanted to comment on about all the new gun owners that happened over the last couple of years. And I said this on a podcast. Believe it or not, of all people, I was on Dan Crenshaw's podcast because this was around like the pistol brace time. And I had said, there's no argument. I've been in the 2A activism space for a long time. And when I'm not running a gun company, I'm out there doing 2A stuff, right? Nothing I could have possibly done or said would have ever had as much of an impact on reaching across and getting people to buy guns than just the current policy of, you know, border control issues and crime issues and defund this and refuse to prosecute that and, you know, civil unrest. Like, nothing I could have ever have said would have ever been as compelling as just looking out your own front door at the condition at the condition of things. And you're like, ah, fuck that. I need a gun.
Your literal front door. I mean, speaking as, you know, Texas residents, you know, the literal Mexican standoff that we've been dealing with, you know, for the past how many months, and everything that's gone on with that. I mean,
and to be inclusive, it's also a Chinese standoff and Iranian standoff and Jordan and
military aged males walking in with military haircuts.
Yeah, but
facial hair, tactical backpacks.
Military aged men in the millions coming here. I mean, and from what I've heard from some of the information I've gathered, there's almost like state sponsored camps where they're staging. This isn't like a casual movement or, you know, it seems to be kind of very deliberate, actually.
Oh, yeah, the Mexican president said a couple days ago, he's like, oh, I'll stop the flow of migrants if you meet my demands. I'm like, so you started it? Like, if you can stop it, that means you started it. Like,
yeah, if you can stop it, it means you can stop it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I certainly think in the next 10 years, somebody's going to put out a book and they're going to be like, hey, like, this was a key thing that, like, you know, moving forward, if you want to create an insurgency in a country, you should flood the country with military-aged men. Like, 100%. Like, it's going to be a thing that people write about for politics and for military concerns in 10 years when people realize the downstream effects of allowing this to happen.
You look at that attack in Moscow recently. I mean, look at the carnage. Just a couple of people. Just, I mean, you're not talking about like a battalion here, man. You're talking about just a couple of assholes that are, you know, that are committed to doing some damage. That it doesn't take a lot of people. And and the amount of damage that just a couple of people could do is significant. And then whenever you look at the scale of how many people, we have no fucking idea who's here and why they're here. We have no idea, none, you know. And it's not going to become apparent until, unfortunately, something really bad happens. And I think everyone's almost a little bit surprised that nothing's happened yet. I wonder what that's going to look like. But it's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when one of these groups gets activated, you know.
Oh, 100%.
And it's fucking scary, dude.
Yeah, the downstream consequences of allowing this to happen, you know, like, it's... I hope that there's going to be a civilian there, or, you know, off-duty cop or somebody that they're not expecting who's able to turn that situation around whenever it does happen, and it, you know, we're able to stem the bleed, if you will, on that incident whenever it does occur, because you can't convince me it won't. It's going to, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That's the hard truth too, that mass media doesn't want to talk about, is the only way to mitigate that and the only way to reduce the damage in that situation is to have good men on standby at all times. You know, normal civilians. I'm not talking about security officers. I'm not talking about police officers. Just normal civilians that are ready on defense at all times.
Do you think that the people that would want to cause us harm, and there are, and like, this isn't some hypothetical scenario, there are people who want to cause our country and our culture harm, and this is not a speculation, they happen to be here, you know. I mean, I wonder if those people consider geographically where they might find the most attractive place to do it, because I would have to imagine that, like, Texas would be less attractive than, say, New York,
right?
Or Texas is less attractive than, say, Washington State, because the odds of catching like a random bullet from a soccer mom in Texas is a hell of a lot higher than catching a bullet, you know, from a person eating at the food court in Washington State.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wonder if they've put that into consideration when they're,
I'm sure,
when they think about this shit, you know.
I mean, if it's the first thing that comes to your mind when we're having a conversation about it, then some dude in whatever country in this, you know, not even hypothetical, but, you know, some dude who's paid a salary to think about this, you know, about the, from whatever country, right? You
know,
I guarantee you it's a bullet point on their things to do today is figure that out.
Yeah. No, I mean, historically, mass shooters, even, you know, domestic-born, mass shooters, they tend to pick the softest targets they can find. They tend to pick the places that have the least amount of defense and resistance, and that's how these people operate. I would imagine that somebody, like you said, doing it for, you know, ideological reasons or whatever would probably do the same, you know?
And shout out to all the soccer moms out there that carry, you know, you're the real ones. talking to my wife here too.
No, it's true. Like, I mean, the women gun owners are probably the fastest growing demographic of gun owners, and they're buying defensive guns. I remember getting criticized for advertising our guns as being a defensive product, saying like, I unapologetically make guns to end fights. I unapologetically make guns to, you know, for defense and for protection, when these guns could be potentially used against, you know, human beings. And people were taken aback by my position on saying that. But I'm like, well, the most common category of guns sold in the country are semi-automatic handguns. I was like, whenever you see a woman or anybody buying a, you know, Glock 43, do you think she's going moose hunting? Like, you mean, you know, like whenever you see someone buying a semi-automatic handgun, is your first thought like sporting purposes? Or no, that fucking thing is being there, it's being bought for the sake of defense, and it was built and designed and whatever to potentially shoot a person in the event that you need it for self-defense. Like, when I see a Glock 43 getting sold, I'm not thinking about, like, you know, elk burgers.
You know? I'm thinking about, you know, it's really a helping hand on the jogging path at that point.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah, it's exactly what it is.
Man. Was it Rick Perry like a few years ago that ended up like, was like running or some shit and ended up shooting like a coyote or some crap that tried to bite him? Or remember it was when he was governor, and I remember it was a big old thing where it was like, oh, why is this guy jogging with a gun? I was like, apparently because there's coyotes wherever he jogs, yeah, or whatever the hell, I mean, it was. Yeah.
To be fair, if where I jogged there was coyotes, I'd have a 34 and a fanny pack, and I'd be prepared to whip that thing out and shoot a coyote or something. Like, it's no thank you. I'm not going to get got by some animal while I'm jogging. No thank you. No.
Yeah, and even more so through hiking. I mean, there's what always surprises me is the amount of the population that is, you know, quote unquote outdoorsy and loves hiking and loves the wilderness and wants to be out there, but refuses to carry a gun and support 2A. You're going to die. There are things out there that are ready to kill you because it feels threatened. There's too many stories of mountain lions and bobcats and coyotes and in, you know, certain parts of the country, bears and
apparently
wolves.
Bears are coming back to Texas. Yeah, I saw that. Black bears.
Yeah. So
that was probably one of
get a gun.
I think one of the earliest seeds planted in my brain about guns and part of the trajectory. That, I mean, obviously the. Where I'm at now is not an accident. Like, I remember I grew up on farms, you know, and I grew up on a ranch, and I lived like that. And in all my time spent with my dad was in, like, you know, the outdoors. And I remember being, like, you know, 4 years old and being terrified about, like, you know, bears and wolves and tigers. I mean, when you're four, I mean, it's entirely possible that there's a fucking velociraptor behind that tree. You know, like, you know, like, this is not out of the question. You know, and I remember my dad, like, you know, very, you know, very confidently explaining, like, hey, man, if you have a good rifle, you are the most dangerous thing in the woods. You are the apex predator. And from very early on, like, that seed was planted that, like, you know, with a good rifle, you know, there's very little to be afraid of. And it stuck, because now that's kind of the way we, you know, I look at things too. I mean, you know, like, that's why we want to make good rifles, because there's
to kill velociraptors,
and, you know, anything else, guys, you might have to.
A yard when I was, I lived out in Helotes growing up, and we had like an acre and a half, whatever. So I was like climbing along the back of the fence, like on some rocks, when I was probably maybe 8 years old, 10 years old, and step from one rock to the other, and then I heard something. I look between my legs, and there's a fucking rattlesnake in between my legs, like, looking up at me, curled up, like, ready to bite me. I was like, holy shit. And it was like a baby one, thank God. It wasn't a big one. It's probably worse if it was a baby one. And so I got the fuck out of there faster than anything. And then I came back with my dad and with the gun and tried to go find it and kill it, and we couldn't find it. But yeah, it was one of those things, like, every now and then you'd see a snake. You know, Helotes has grown up so much, I doubt they run into that as much anymore, but yeah, it's a thing. I mean, even where I live, I live on a freaking golf course, and we constantly eat snakes and skunks and, I mean, all sorts of random, nothing that's going to kill you, but I'd shoot a fucking skunk if it tried to spray me.
yeah, same here. And to add on to what Mike was saying about being the apex predator in the woods, if you have a rifle, don't discount good boots.
God, yeah.
Yeah, get you some good boots. Good boots and a rifle. If you're a nudist, you know, nudist with a rifle in the woods, do your thing, you know, peyote, all that good stuff. But have some good boots at the same time.
at least have good boots on the nudist camping trip. Who would camp?
To be fair, I would be more afraid if I turned the corner on a trail and there's just some fucking like naked dude with a lever gun. I'd be like, oh hell no.
That's how you get shot.
Yeah, I'd be like, nope.
Do nudist camps? A good question. Like, do they camp? I know there's like nudist cruises and all this weird shit. Like, there used to be a nudist colony in South San Antonio. Do they camp nude? That's a good question.
I wonder how they can still carry.
I just think about
they don't.
Not in the prison wallet. I just think about, you know, that show. I don't even know if it's around anymore. Naked and Afraid. Mm-hmm. That always bothered me watching that show. I always got a kick out of it. But you know, you guys are gonna. You need to take care of your feet. I don't care about the rest of your body. Just take care of your feet, man.
You gotta be worried about, man, like camping and going like swimming in a creek. I mean, like that's how you get something like a you know. One of those creatures in your pee hole that fucking eats your brain. Yeah, you know, that fucking weird shit goes on.
They have that in like Brazil. That's up there like with actual quicksand. Threat. Like when you go swimming in like, maybe it's not Brazil. There's some place in South America, but like you actually go swimming in there, they tell you, be like, do not do this. Like,
yeah. It happens even in the United States every now and then. It's like, oh, this guy got this brain eating amoeba at the beach or some shit through an open wound. I was like, man, I was like, you know, like God hates you. Like, yeah. Like millions of people swim at that beach and he was like, fuck that guy. That's gotta be a shit way to go.
Yeah, He had some severe sins somewhere. And yeah. He's paying for it.
Either that or the CIA is getting really fucking good.
Right.
Oh, dude, man, that's not like the Russians always did. Remember, you ever see the thing years like in the 70s, 80s where the guy had a cane with the needle on the end with little ball of like sarin in it and walked up behind a dude while he was walking on the street and stuck him in the back of the leg and fucking killed him?
Yeah.
I think they did it again. One of the North Koreans got it in like Indonesia or some shit. They did it again. They like doing that, just like sticking people with fucking diseases and shit. Like, they're pretty creative. Like, we kill them with drones and shit, man. The Russians are coming out with all sorts of crazy under the table shit off people.
We tried to kill Castro with like an exploding cigar like three times before we said, all right, fuck it. This is like, not working. We can't, we got to put the X on this. It's not working. The box, guys. He's like,
Acme cigars. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah. Yeah. I kid you not. It's like three or four times we tried it. Like, there's some dude who was, you know, sitting at CIA and he was just like, all right, but what if we try it again, guys? Like, let's just change the label on the box. Maybe he won't fucking notice.
Didn't we try to kill somebody with like an exploding cell phone one time? I remember that was a thing. I think we did that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, probably still doing it.
Yeah. He's like, he's not dead, but he's real messed up, so he won't do it again.
Yeah, whatever threat there is gone.
The one I always liked was the fucking Hellfire with the blades in it. Have you seen that thing? So we can fire Hellfire from a drone, but there's no explosive in it. There's just four big-ass blades, and they shoot it at cars and just goes through the car and chops into four pieces.
Oh, my God.
It sounds like a Star Wars thing.
Yeah, that's
dude, it's a real thing. And it's like, I was like, who the fuck thought that up? It's fucking genius.
Somebody in the military-industrial complex who likes money.
It's just like the blades pop out. And
Somebody at Lockheed Martin was like, you know what we would do really cool, guys? Blades.
Yeah. sounds like an episode of Metalocalypse.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like this. They call it like the Ginsu or some shit. But yeah, it's like it's not a secret anymore, obviously. But yeah, it's fucking Hellfire with like, I don't think anybody really knows what it looks like. But yeah, there's apparently like blades in it that pop out. Oh yeah, there's a picture of some guy that hit by one. Yeah, look at that. So right through the fucking car.
Oh my God.
Jesus Christ.
I'm afraid now.
Yeah.
That's just like a lawnmower blade getting thrown at you on steroids. No, thank
you. Rocket propelled lawnmower that goes through your car.
Yeah.
We're getting pretty creative. I'm glad. I mean, it's like, oh man, like we've been powerful for so long. We're not creative anymore. Like we obviously totally are. Yeah. I don't even know what a weird shit we have.
We're obviously bored.
Well, I think we have a history of at least publicly underestimating ourselves in that era. You know, that way we can pull out some wild and crazy thing, and they're like, you guys had this? We're like, oh dude, we've had it since the 80s. Like we've just been lying to you.
So that thing, like, for as much as America's portrayed as the bad guy around the world. Like,
I don't know if that helps our image. Hellfire drone with blades.
Blowing up the whole neighborhood.
Well, no, sounds like some Dr. Doom shit.
Well, right, but see, I look at it in the inverse. I think to myself, like, think about how much engineering and math went into trying to reduce collateral damage, to try to surgically, like, they can kill the guy in the back seat and the driver's fine. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. American aggression and, like, you know, some of the stuff that we find ourselves involved in across the world and all that kind of stuff, that deserves its own real conversation and debate. But the fact that somebody at least thought about how can we just cut that guy in half? Let's leave his neighbor alone.
Even if you go back and I don't know if y'all watched Masters of Air or not, but that's actually a conversation they have a lot, and they are getting bar fights about it because the British bombed at night and we bombed during the day. So a lot more of our guys died, but we did it so we could actually accurately bomb factories. And the British just said, fuck it, and just flew over Germany and carpet bombed the shit out of it at night. And the Germans couldn't kill them, but they're probably hitting schools and God knows what they hit.
In fairness to the Brits, though, they were constantly being bombed, day and night by the Germans.
They wanted to get them back. They're fuck you guys.
And then the invention of the V2 rocket just specifically to bomb, that's something.
I don't blame them at all, yeah.
Well, no, I'm just saying, I would imagine if people were raining, hellfire on our cities, we probably would, hesitate. Or there'd probably be a lot bigger appetite to, return the favor, you know?
Well,
we'd go scorched earth for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we absolutely would.
But, we did it to them, too. We firebombed the shit out of Japan,
Well, I think something that was really interesting about World War II comparative to a lot of the other wars is you really saw a departure, largely, not just tiny little incidents here and there, but a large departure from the concept of a gentleman warfare of we've agreed to these certain rules and we're going to stick to them and we're going to do all these things. And it was as soon as the war ripped off, in its full concept, right? There was one side immediately was no, we're not doing that. And the other side was cool, neither will we. We can get into the nitty-gritty about how awful we can make this.
Yeah, you saw a few incidents, the Battle of the Bulge and stuff, where it's during Christmas they stopped and, everybody chilled out on Christmas. A little bit of that, but for the most part, yeah, it was just balls to the wall.
Especially in the, the European front, but, you had nothing like that in the Pacific.
Yeah.
No. My grandfather was in the 1st Marine Division. Chesty Puller, I think, was actually his battalion commander on Peleliu. Yeah, his unit in Peleliu had 71% casualty rates on Bloody Nose Ridge and stuff. Yeah. But, you sit on that generation. Unfortunately, they're almost all gone. But I was kind of raised by my grandfather. When people think about their grandparents, that's just little old grandpa. Grandpa was using his K-bar to cut the gold out of Japanese teeth, whether they were alive or not. You're sitting on grandpa's knee, but that guy at one point was a murderous savage, and thank God, and thank God for it. Those are some tough, tough bastards, dude. And I don't think that there was a whole lot of sympathy for the enemy at that time, Bataan Death March and Pearl Harbor and things like that. There wasn't a whole lot of let's think about this. No, it's Bob, hand me that K-bar. Yeah. Hand me that
K-bar. This guy's already dead, but fuck him.
Yeah. That's almost, he's getting there. He will be soon.
Dan Carlin's got a fantastic podcast series. He calls it I don't remember exactly what his verbiage is for it, but it's got to be 30 hours where he talks about what the war in the Pacific was like. Oh, and it was it's a night and day difference compared to the European theater, because Americans showed up and we were we understand how to do this type of warfare. It's no problem. The Brits were no, you don't understand. The Japanese do not follow the same rules we did. And unfortunately, we had to learn the lesson the hard way. And that's when you saw all those mass casualties really early on into the Pacific theater.
I think we're surprised the other way too. Because you show go back to going into the miniseries, but the Pacific, they're bayonet charging machine guns. It's way different level of just crazy.
Commit to the bit.
Yeah. I want one.
A machine gun? Flamethrower.
Yeah. Bayonet charging machine gun.
I want a flamethrower. But think about that. We're talking about the Ginsu blade here, and you're gonna cut. But our grandparents incinerated people with a flamethrower.
Yeah, that's how we're just crazy. fucking just melt, just barbecue them.
Oh, pillbox? Yeah, I got something for that. But yeah, that's.
Now we have thermobarics, but back then it was flamethrowers.
I don't think I would have wanted to carry one of those on my back. I saw a historian break down just how crude a machine that thing was.
Oh, they call it the Zippo, yeah, because you're just as likely to get burned to death as the other guy was.
Yeah, you were just as likely to die from that thing as you were to kill someone else with it. Like, it does not seem like a good time.
But that just sounds liberating.
But still, I just imagine it as an instrument of warfare. You know, like, you know, this is a conversation I was having. Not to kind of segue, we were looking at like the flamethrower and looking. So I would posit, and I'd love to hear y'all's thoughts. I've gotten a peek behind the curtain at where I think things are kind of going, in the sense that, you know, some of the stuff that we're developing, like our 6 Max, things like that. And I'll just use the 6 Max example. I think if guns were a yardstick, and the invention of gunpowder was an inch one, I bet you were at like inch 35 when it comes to like the future of firearms. I don't think that firearms, the way we think about it, will be like this for maybe, I don't know, maybe 20 years, 30 years. But at some point, you are going to max out the physics of what you can do with burning propellant accelerating mass. I mean, if you think about how firearms work from the invention of gunpowder, the ignition of a propellant accelerating mass on a pipe, not much has changed overall, you know, right, since then, right? And now you're getting to the point to where, you know, you're legitimately maxing out what you can do with that formula, and whatever replaces that is going to look very, very different. You know, I don't know if it's, well,
lasers. It's definitely lasers.
Well, I mean, there's other ways to propel mass. You know, there's other ways to do stuff. And I'm just saying, like, it's interesting. I wonder what that looks like over, 20, 30 years? I don't know. Something I think about every day.
What's that movie? Is it Eraser, where they got, like, the handheld fucking rail guns where they can like shoot through walls and shit.
Rail guns are super neat.
Well, you start looking at the advancement of body armor and like some of the stuff out there that, you know, is coming, and then you have to look at how do you defeat that.
Flamethrowers.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Groin shots. You defeat it with groin shots.
There you go. So yeah, no, it's gonna, anyways, dude. Sorry, it's something I think about.
They just launched the new like Marine Corps freaking accuracy, you know, marksmanship standard. It's just people just shooting them in the balls all the time.
I mean, to be fair, if I got shot in the balls, I'm out of the fight. Like, yeah, I don't want to fight anymore. Yeah, I'm good.
I don't want to do anything. I'm just gonna play here and die.
It's gonna be the new A zone.
Yeah. They make all the IPSC targets bigger.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to do anything to the USPSA ones. You just flip them upside down.
Yeah.
It'll be no problem.
So the new headshot.
yeah, for sure.
Man, so what's PA have on the menu for this year, man? What's exciting? What can we expect? What can we see coming?
You know, just more, right? And that's something that I'm always hungry for. My entire team is always hungry for. The whole mantra behind everything that we do and you know, everything that I've put into the team is, you know, I just want as many people to have everything they need, and as much of it as they would desire. The whole thing behind, behind every blade of grass, you know, we really try to live that out. And, you know, there's a reason why, you know, I try to do my best to sell, 5,000 stripped Anderson lower receivers over the course of a Sunday, right? At that $29.99 price, it's something that we really believe in, and we want as many guns out there as possible. And you know, just in order to do that, we have to do more, right? We have to partner with companies like you guys that are really, you know, about the culture, about the community, and make sure, you know, we're putting our best foot forward in showcasing everything that we could potentially do.
You're selling that guy, that old guy that's giving away lower receivers for Christmas. I bet people like that. Like, I bought like 50 lower receivers. I gave one to everyone I know for Christmas. It's like, cool.
Yeah, we have those guys. We have those guys.
No, hey, I mean, you know, I know that, you know, people joke and stuff like that. But I mean, Anderson Manufacturing, I mean, I think like they'll make 1 million receivers in a year. I think that's about right as far as the number of receivers. I mean, if anybody's doing something for in common use, man, it's those guys, you know. And I agree with you. Like getting the most amount of guns out there is it's, I almost look at it as a duty. You know, this isn't just a business, it's a cause, you know. I mean, like, it's a, it, and the guys that, like you, that we work the closest with believe in that, believe in the cause. Like, you, there's a lot easier ways to earn a dollar, man. If you're doing this, what you and I are doing at the level that we're doing it at, it's because you fucking believe that this is the hardest, we're making it much harder to have our society subjugated by fucking anyone. The more guns that we put out there in circulation, I don't care what the name says on the slide. I don't care. You're making this culture harder to subjugate, and that's something that we all, it's a common thread amongst all of us. Even the people I don't get along with, we can at least nod to each other and say, all right, you know, like, all right, you know, we're pushing.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And, you know, it's, it, I couldn't even pretend to lie and say that it's about the money, because trust me, it's not. There's not that much money in this industry. If I was in it for the money, I'd be in the grocery business. I'd be, you know, one of the head guys at HEB. You know, yeah. Shout out to Butter Tortillas. but you know, everything
the,
that, that
the
we
Anderson
try to
lower
do.
Of the grocery world.
Yeah, Anderson lower of the grocery world. Butter Tortillas. They're gonna have a run on this now. Thank you guys.
Yeah. You know, so you brought know, to you by. Butter tortillas.
Yeah. Dude, the special I would have if you want to sell a lot of guns, because I've met like multiple like, you know, really cool like rednecks have told me to like I carry two 1911s. Why? It's because I got two hands. That should be your special. Be like, I buy two 1911s for, you know, get the finest, cheapest one you can. Be like, buy two of them for this price. Why? Because you got two hands. Because
you got two hands. Yeah, that's for sure.
So and, are you tracking at all? I have heard. No, and I mean, and again, the rumor mill, and no one has a fucking crystal ball. But are you tracking at all the nitrocellulose issue, and that there might be some shortages on gunpowder and propellant this year?
Yeah, it's been a conversation for us. You know, we're partnered with almost all of the majors in terms of ammunition, close relationships with all those guys, and it's been a conversation for us for about 2 years now. And we try to be super strategic in the way that we buy ammo. No, we don't have the best selection in the industry. No, we don't have, you know, the most, and we know we don't have the best pricing, but we try to make it available at all times. And that's another thing that is a, because the customer needs it type of product. I don't make a single thing on ammunition.
Yeah, no, ammunition's a tough game. I mean, it's a tough game. There's not big margins in it, you know. I will say to the audience listening, from the industry, and this is probably one of the biggest retailers in the country, we're a manufacturer who has to forecast our test fire ammo and some of the other projects we're working on, like, months and months out. I can tell you right now that the nitrocellulose supply, there is some concern. And so This is not a sales pitch. I don't sell ammo, and you don't make a damn penny on ammo. But if you're watching this and you have a couple extra bucks, go ahead and squirrel another case of something away.
Yeah. Ammo and mags, guys. Stock it up.
You can't have too many. It's physically impossible. You can't have too many.
But you damn sure can have too few. And, absolutely. And I can tell you right now that all the forecasting, everything that's been done, everything we're looking at, our data, your data, whatever. If there's a case of ammo right now, and no one's fist fighting over it, you know, at the local academy or whatever, go ahead and probably, you know,
now's the time to stock up.
Yeah, put it under your bed now. So,
pro tip: put some buy on Amazon. They sell those like desiccant bags, like you get in like clothing and stuff. Buy a bunch of those fuckers and open the cases up and throw them in there, because man, you don't want. Oh, I've had this ammo for 10 years, and you open it up, it's all corroded and fucked up.
Like, yeah, and just rust bucket.
Yeah, I mean, I keep the stuff in a locker in my garage, but I'm always worried about, you know, corroding, you know, getting messed up, you know, the powder, you know. Ammo can go bad if you let it sit long enough, so if you're going to be stockpiling this stuff, make sure it's stored properly, so.
Well, I've noticed about ammo that's been exposed to a lot of different heating and cooling cycles, or, you know, moisture and drying cycles. The ammunition still works, just like your standard deviation and your extreme spreads go all over the place, because shit's burning at different rates, and you have, you know, like, the ammo works, it's just very inconsistent, you know. But I'd say I'd rather have some inconsistent ammo than fucking no ammo. Yeah. Right.
Like, yeah. So I'd rather have you know, 3 MOA than none.
Yeah, well, we have some pretty neat stuff, and I don't know, we're probably not going to talk about it here, but, you know, as far as ammo goes, you might be some more ammo available, some different types out there. coming pretty soon.
Buy it from Primary Arms.
Yeah, primaryarms.com. well, shit, dude. You got anything else, Kyle?
No, man, I think we've covered it all, man. We just glad y'all came down. We had a really good time. Y'all been here for about, what, 2-3 days now? Shot a lot of content. Had a little barbecue.
Got to get some FaceTime and hang out, man. We work together every day, but we don't really get a lot of downtime just to catch up, man. I want to do some hunting with you this year.
Yeah, yeah, let's figure it out. Like I said, you know, I'm a big hunter, and any excuse I can think of to get in the woods with a rifle and just disappear for a day or two, let's do it.
We should try to plan something like that. Maybe like a West Texas All Dad, do something kind of fun.
I can get behind that. Yeah. I can get behind two of them.
If you kill a bison, don't post it on the internet because the internet is very mad at me.
Really? I'm gonna kill a bison.
Dude, I have so much hate on that my Instagram post. I'm not gonna take it down. Fuck them. But yeah, like they're just like Native Americans, like all sorts of people, just really angry that me and Tom killed that bison. Should go look at it. It's pretty funny.
I'm going to kill a bison and then post a picture of you with it.
No, that's right, dude.
We can just crudely Photoshop.
They're like, why'd you kill it? I'm like, because it's fucking delicious. That's why. Like,
yeah, have you ever had a buffalo burger? My God.
Yeah, it's delicious. I mean, buffalo ribeye, man, that's good.
Yeah.
I've got a new rug. I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know. New headdress?
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't make a hammer out of its thigh bone, but I mean.
No, I think like we should start looking into that. I'll start calling a couple of my outfitter buddies that do that West Texas stuff, man. And, like, that'd be fun. We need to do something like that. We've been talking about it for about, I don't know, 6 years now. Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's about time.
Yeah. The yeah, nature of this business, always being busy. But, you know.
I mean, y'all are out in Houston. We should go alligator hunting. That's what we should do.
Gator tastes good. Yeah. So why not?
Yeah. I've been a few times when I lived in Florida, and it is very fun. And talk about a rush.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're fucking dinosaurs, man. I killed a 12 feet 7 inch alligator with the buddy of mine. He has a ranch here in Texas where like two of the biggest rivers like converge on his ranch. And this guy's, by the way, one of those super gun owners, like you know, like machine guns, tanks, you know, M79s, whatever. Like, this is one of those dudes. He invited me out, and that is something that everyone should experience once, dude.
Yeah, let's do it.
But I am glad y'all came. It was really good to actually get some downtime and catch up, man. And looking forward to kicking a lot of ass together this year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think we have a strong plan in place. Everything that we've talked about, you know, all the items that we're partnering on later this year, all the exciting new products you guys have coming out. I mean, you guys are being really, really innovative. You know, a lot more innovative than you know some of the other companies that you know we've had the pleasure of dealing with, but you know, I don't want to leak too much. But
yeah, let's just say there's some pretty neat stuff.
Yeah,
I think that our friends and clients are gonna really enjoy.
Yeah, yeah. Check us out for the content, and then come back and buy it.
Cool, guys. Hey, thanks for coming. Sons of Liberty podcast brought to you by Butter Tortillas, mm-hmm. Heaven Hill. And Mexican Coke.
And hunting velociraptors in the woods.
That's right. Yeah.
With Six Max.
There
with
you
Six
go.
Six Max.
Yep.
All right, guys. See you next week.
Later.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today right here at the Liberty Tree Studio. But be sure to visit us at solgw.com for hard-use blasters, badass swag, and much, much more.